learn what your boss cares about and maybe what your boss's boss cares about, right? I think at times in my career, I figured opportunity would just come by doing a good job of the things that have been assigned to me. And it's noticed, but you got to kind of ask sometimes for more opportunity or for a new role or to take on new responsibility. And so that starts with understanding, what does your boss care about?
Welcome to Beyond the Ledger, real conversations with people driving business forward. I'm Troy Ashby, CPA and host. Each episode, we unpack stories, challenges, and insights from today's top accounting and finance leaders. This podcast is brought to you by my friends over at MarketScale. Welcome to Beyond the Ledger podcast. I'm your host, Troy Ashby. Today's guest is Joe LaPola, CFO of Driver Pipeline Company, a Texas-based construction firm with more than 1,000 employees and 50-year history. Joe started his career in public accounting before moving into construction finance. Today, he bridges that financial strategy with the field operations by leading accounting, finance, and HR for the company. Outside of work, Joe's married. He has 4 young kids. And oh, by the way, his wife is also a CPA. So, Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roy.
It's good to see you. I'm glad we can make this happen.
Yeah, excited to do this.
Before we get started, just something to kind of break the ice. I always like to ask somebody that is kind of non-work related or just something that they can't find if they go search you on the interwebs or on LinkedIn. So tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting when you talk to people and they ask, what are your hobbies or what do you do in your spare time? And you alluded to it a little bit with a bunch of kids that are not that old. I mean, my oldest is 10, youngest is 5. No twins in there. Life is busy with kid things, right? So, I mean, we're doing sports and activities and birthday parties and also just sometimes being exhausted, right? So, I mean, we get them to bed and I don't have energy to do other things. So, you know, my hobbies and activities outside of work largely currently center around my family and my children. You can't tell that by looking on LinkedIn, and I don't manage active social media really at this point, but family is kind of the driver behind all of it, and it's fun, but it's exhausting.
I always compare it to like you're like a ride share. Mm-hmm. Like you're Uber or Lyft for these kids as they're going to all their events. That's all you do.
Yeah, I mean, this Saturday we have 4 sporting events that are within 3 hours of each other and are nowhere near each other.
Of course,
that's part of being down here in DFW, is everything's just spread out.
Yeah, do you have to divide and conquer a lot, you and your wife?
Yeah, well, and we'll probably talk about it later, but part of moving down here is being closer to family. And so my in-laws are down here. They're actually going to help because we probably couldn't get to all of them, just the two of us. So, but my wife and I will definitely be dividing and conquering. So, you know, I'll see one kid play this weekend and see a different kid next weekend and have the in-laws cover. But we want to provide those opportunities for them, and they enjoy it, and we do the best to make it work.
Yeah, well, wildly important. Well, good for you, Dad. Good for you. Well, let's dive in. Let's rewind. Let's go back and let's talk about early stages in your career. You know, the audience that we are speaking to most are further along in their career, but the takeaways for them are like, how did you get to where you are today, or lessons to be learned. But to do that, let's rewind and kind of go back to the beginning with where you started your career.
Sure. Yeah, I went to college and got an accounting degree and decided I was going to go into public accounting. Kind of had an opportunity that was pretty random that got me into Colorado. I wasn't from Colorado, didn't have any connections to Colorado, hadn't spent any time in Colorado. But it was an offer at a time that the economy wasn't the best, and I hadn't interviewed anywhere else. I was from upstate New York, I'd gone to school in Michigan. So I kind of made that leap. And
hold on. How did they find you? New York to
it's all well all before I talk about this, right? It's okay. All relationships and connections. So right. One of my buddies from college was from Colorado. His dad was the owner of an electrical construction company, and they were a client of the CPA firm I ended up interviewing for.
Okay.
So somehow it came up that, hey, he could put my resume in and maybe help me get an interview, which he did. We did a phone interview and that went well, and they offered to have me come out and do a second interview, and I still had a semester left. So they made an offer and I hadn't interviewed anywhere in Michigan or New York, which would have been the places I would have looked. So it was random, but but not, right? I mean, that's a lot of what will come up in my career is it's just who you know, right? Everyone thinks who you know. Well, it's just building relationships, and different opportunities come up, and sometimes it's being willing to take a leap, and that was a leap. I knew one guy when I moved to Colorado. He was somebody I'd gone to college with. We lived together, and then I met people at work, right?
Yeah.
And it was fun. I mean, I liked public accounting. It's a lot of fun way to start your career. A lot of young people. It's very intentional learning path, working towards your CPA. I bounced around a little bit in public accounting firms during a decade in Colorado, kind of growing each time. So I started at a smaller firm that focused in construction. I met my wife there, which you had alluded to, Barbara. She was also an accountant.
I was wondering if that was going to be a college thing or a,
yeah,
you know.
Well, that's the
a colleague.
Being in public accounting, right, you don't have a lot of time,
sure,
sometimes to go and meet people. And being in an area that I didn't have connections, right, I knew a bunch of guys, and I knew
right.
people at work.
Yeah.
So we'd go out and have a good time, but I wasn't meeting any women. My wife and I worked together some, and we had a friendship first. We really hit it off. We geek out about the same things. And at that first firm is when we had our first kid. And we got married, and then we both kind of left that firm and moved to different firms, kind of just growing along that path of, you know, what could we achieve with our careers and where were we trying to go. We didn't have to leave that first firm, but you know, being married in a small firm, it just kind of made sense.
Yeah.
So we went our own paths. She went to a large regional firm in Colorado. I went to a different one that was new to the market and kind of had a lot of opportunity. You know, eventually we ended up working at the same firm again.
Stop it.
And then we started having kids. And so very quickly after that, she got out and started working in the industry. And I continued on that path. So I was at a firm, EKS&H, which was the largest regional CPA firm in Colorado. It eventually merged with a Midwest CPA firm, Plant Moran.
Okay.
And so I started in kind of a focus in construction, and then I dabbled in a lot of other industries, and then I ended with a focus in construction. So, I mean, I spent a decade in public accounting, loved the construction industry, and liked the people I met, you know, that either focused on that at the CPA firm or the clients, right? I enjoyed the aspects of driving around and seeing construction going on, whether that's a building or a road or just the tangible nature
yeah.
of it, kind of.
Oh, yeah. Is that – so I guess so over those – was it three firms?
Three firms.
So over those three firms, you chose to focus on construction at some point, but were you kind of dabbling in it, or are you trying to figure out if construction is where you wanted to be? I know you don't have control when you're younger. They're putting sure. you wherever they need your body, but how did that decision-making work
so
for you?
So the first firm was definitely – their focus was construction,
okay.
so my focus was construction.
Yeah.
And it was a great place to start. I mean, it was small, so I got to see everything. I mean,
okay.
I would do the audit – do the tax return for the company, do the tax return for the owner.
Yeah.
So it was kind of start to finish focus in construction, and they did some other industries, but not so much.
Okay.
Once I left there was when I got exposed to other industries, and that was really more of me not necessarily having an intentional direction I wanted to go, which was fine at that point. I was in my mid-20s. And also, what did the CPA firm need? Where were the holes? Where did they need to plug you in? And so I did a lot of that for a while, which was just getting to experience different things, finding opportunities where there were holes. But I think eventually learning that that wasn't where I was going to probably excel. If it was areas that I didn't maybe have the interest in, or there were holes because there was lots of, you know, issues that were maybe not in my wheelhouse. So it's either, you know, focus in and lean in on those things, or just be the guy that plugs the holes. And I found that that was kind of harder to really differentiate myself. And so that was an intentional move towards the end of that public accounting journey for me, was refocusing back into construction and making that a choice, as opposed to kind of letting others put me where they saw the fit.
All right. And so at that point, what level were you then at that firm?
So I probably, well, I joined that firm as a manager.
Okay.
And so then I started niching more as a manager still.
Yeah.
And then I became a senior manager before I then eventually left.
Got it.
But I was there probably 5 years.
And during that time, were you thinking, I'm a partner, I'm a CPA firm partner? Because usually if you stay, even if you're changing firms, if you're going up to senior manager, you're thinking partner.
Yeah. I mean, public accounting's got a high churn rate, but a lot of that happens before manager.
Right.
Right. So I had been in it longer. And yeah, I mean, I certainly saw partner as a path. I liked a lot of the partners that I got to spend time with. I liked a lot of what they got to do at that level, which was more of the client-facing, relationship-building side of, you know, the audit, tax, whatever. I mean, they weren't in the weeds doing the details. They were managing the relationship, making sure the clients were taken care of, going and finding new work.
Right.
Those were things that I was interested in. But we also kept having kids.
Fair.
So I had all four before I left public accounting.
All right.
That's not to say that you can't have kids and be a partner. It was an option, and it was an option that I still considered all the way up until the point I left, right? But I, at some point, I was more open to the idea of transitioning out.
Yep.
But I was pretty particular on what I would leave for.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because I think sometimes people are like running away from where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you probably had some items that you needed to hit. Like, if I'm going to leave, it needs to be these things. Do you remember what those were at that time? Like, what would kind of cause you to be interested in kind of passively considering something new?
Yeah, so I have pretty good recollection of what I wanted. So being a senior manager, I wanted an opportunity that would either be directly to controller or directly to even CFO. I mean, construction can come in a lot of shapes and sizes. I knew I wanted construction, I wanted one of those higher up positions. But so that means you're probably not going to a very large contractor, unless it's maybe a client and they know you well. But I didn't want to go into a really large contractor as an assistant controller or something of that nature, because it felt more a little bit of a backward step,
mm-hmm.
and I was still open to the partner path, right? So it was having options open. But so I wanted controller or CFO, and if it was controller, I didn't want to be under a controller that was 5 years older than me, right? So making a leap towards something that maybe had that path to CFO, and I wanted to work somewhere that had a real accounting team. Mm-hmm. I worked with lots of contractors that had two people in accounting,
sure.
and the controller was posting journal entries and, sometimes checking in on AP invoices or whatever. Those positions matter big to those companies, but I didn't want that kind of a position. I wanted enough of a team that I felt like I was managing and helping with the reporting or closing the books or things of that nature, because I was at a managing level in public accounting, right? The comp had to make sense. And then other than that, I mean, I think it was maybe location. We were happy with where we were living, and I didn't want to have too long of a commute. So it was kind of controller, CFO, or controller with path to CFO, a legit accounting team, and not too far away.
Yeah.
I wasn't interested in moving at that time.
Right. And you're still in Colorado at this point?
Yep.
So, but by doing that, you have the ability to stay engaged where you are. And if something comes up or somebody reaches out or you find something, you kind of know you need to go higher up the middle market route. You're mm-hmm. not going, and you can't go to the lower middle market route, because you're going to have the two or three folks. I was going somewhere.
Well, this is gonna be perfect, because we haven't talked about this. But if you want to know how I then left public accounting.
Yeah,
we've never talked about this, but
it was
you, not you specifically, but it was a recruiter. Like I said, I was happy with what I was doing. Partner path was good. I was open to a change. I wasn't actively looking for it, right? I had met with a recruiter once who cold called me. I didn't know him.
Sure.
They put enough in the LinkedIn message to prove that they actually had read my profile, right? They didn't say, hey, we have an oil and gas tax job, even though your profile says everything about construction and audit.
Yeah. yeah.
It was a very relatable post to something I'd be interested in. And so I said yes, and that company ended up going through a buyout or an M&A, and then it got delayed and the post just kind of went away. The position never happened. So I never interviewed for it, but I told them the things that I was interested in, the recruiter. I said, here's the things I will look at, and I won't look at much else. 6 months later, they called, and it was December. I mean, it was literally December 20th. I was getting ready for Christmas, and getting ready for audit season.
Oh, sure.
So they sent me something, and you're in public accounting long enough, you know that leaving in January is setting your buddies up for a tough time. But she presented what it was, and I had this checklist of things that I cared about that I thought were pretty specific, and it checked the boxes, right? So I said, okay, I need to interview for it.
Yep.
I said that this is what I would leave for. This is that.
Right.
I didn't know the company. They weren't a client of ours. They weren't a client of the firm at all. I'd never heard of them. We did an interview like January 3rd. So they wanted to interview ASAP, but it was Christmas, right? So there was like,
okay,
we had to wait for the holidays.
Yeah.
I did an interview January 3rd. It went well. And as I've learned is... sometimes when they like you and you like them, it moves very quickly.
It does move very quickly.
So I had a second interview very quickly after that. I don't remember when, but they made an offer. It was the right offer, right? It was what I wanted, exactly how I had defined it, right? So then I had to think about, am I comfortable leaving public accounting at a time I know is not ideal?
Right.
Eventually, I mean, the answer was clearly yes, right? I mean, I got to do what's best for me.
So how did you navigate that? Because I understand what you're going through, the wrestling with the January departure or even February. But I guess what steps did you, like, is it just, you know, this is me and my family? How did you kind of work through that? Obviously, it was very exciting. If it hit every piece of something that you talked about months before, you know the answer is yes. So how did you navigate making that transition?
Yeah, I think it's, certainly, I would say it started with just being very detailed on what I wanted, right? The whole idea of visualization or whatever you want to call it. When that shows up, then you kind of have already made the decision, sort of, right? I said I'd leave for this, and this is here. And if it wasn't that, then the decision was kind of easy. It was, I have higher standard for what I would be willing to take to make this transition, and the answer is no. But it's a consultation with my wife, right? Thinking through how will this impact our family. For better or worse, right? Part of the public accounting is you got a lot of flexibility. This was COVID time. I was working from home, which I didn't love, but I was able to help a lot. We had had our last kid in May of 2020. So I was home. I was around. As a senior manager, you got to put in the hours, but when you do it, it's kind of up to you. So thinking through that, I'm gonna have to go to an office now every day. It was 30 minutes from our house, right? It was borderline for that area of what is a reasonable commute.
Yep.
Thinking through that, okay, what does this mean for you as the other parent having to now manage more and take on more responsibility, right? So there's consultation there, but I had her buy-in. It certainly felt right to me with all the things I had defined for what would be worth making a switch. And so then the decision wasn't that hard, but then it was just trying to think through how do I make this as easy as possible for the people I care about that I'm leaving behind.
The people you left in the trenches. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
It happens. So let's move on then. You moved out of public. You went into industry. Bumps along the way. Like, probably felt pretty good about your positioning, but then, you know, industry is different. So what was that experience like? Stepping in the door and opening the books.
It's different. It's funny because I had audited lots of companies, lots of construction companies. It's different being there every day and managing the internal team. I mean, I had a very good background for doing what I had transitioned into, but there's a lot of big differences, right? Some of them are just more of knowledge base. I mean, one of the first things I adjusted to was insurance, right? I won't talk about it much, but I came in and it was just like, oh, I don't actually know a lot about managing an insurance program because we don't really do a lot with auditing that touches insurance. So I had to get up to speed on things that I clearly didn't know, right? I had a very strong accounting, reporting, all that kind of base, but I didn't have the other aspects that a controller may oversee. And so there, part of the appeal for the job was I was going to be the top person.
Yeah.
So I came into a controller role without a CFO. It was a company that had a size that didn't need both. And so I got to oversee a lot, and that was exciting, but then there's a lot of things that I just was new to. And I can talk more about those, but then there's the other side, which is just the people and the culture, right? It's just different being in industry versus public accounting. There's public accounting is very like bottom heavy, is all people with college degrees in their 20s that want to have ping pong tables and you know, kegs at the office. And that's why those places are really fun to work, because it's very tailored towards the experience of 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
And that's fun. And as a senior manager, I was managing a bunch of folks like that. But they also changed, right? Depending on the engagement, the audit engagement, you'd have a different team. So you weren't maybe directly responsible for the same people year long. And you very much fit into a structured environment that the firm was setting as far as performance expectations and feedback and comp and all that. Very structured. Moving into then my next role, number one, I went from being the oldest that I managed, right? So within my group, I was older than everybody by several years, sure, to then all of a sudden be the youngest. That's not always the case, but it was a flip, right? I was the youngest managing a small team. It was five folks, but they were all older than me, and they were different backgrounds, right? So some of them had an accounting degree, and some of them were not accounting at all, but they'd been in AP or HR or payroll. And so it was learning how to manage just a different type of person, not
plus all year.
Yeah. And then they're only mine, and yeah, there's no, right, there's no guidelines exactly. I've never worked somewhere where it says, here's how we do performance feedback. More accurately, I've worked places that have no system for that, right, and do not give any feedback.
I hadn't thought about that. Cause you know, in public, I'm assuming they still do this. Like, you give a review on the engagement and it's a few things, but I hadn't thought about the performance evaluations at all, or, you know, the traditional one-on-ones or any of that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I found that really interesting and useful. So I think being in public accounting as long as I was, there were lessons to be learned that I brought over to industry that, again, three contractors I've worked for now, none of them were doing these things. And that's not a knock on them. They didn't need it. Yeah. Maybe they just didn't have the people that had the experience doing it. But I brought that with the idea of, okay, well, we can define expectations. Mm-hmm. We can hold each other accountable. We can give people opportunity for growth. And we can give them feedback.
That's it. Right. Frankly, they want it.
And that's what I learned, right, is it's different. The motivations, the things that people want being in an industry are different than those mid-20 public accounting folks. But everybody's looking for something out of their career. And it's whether it's opportunity to learn new things or opportunities to manage their schedule or just to feel like someone cares and will help them with things that are challenging and maybe can be better. And so I found that having those conversations in scenarios where those maybe didn't exist before were largely well received. People enjoyed having that blend of what I would call the public accounting culture with more small,
yeah,
to mid-sized construction culture.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But totally different from operations, right? They didn't, like, the field guys don't do that. And I wasn't trying to make them do that either.
All right, we're going to sit
like,
down.
You guys can do your own thing. And we'll do our own thing that works with our group. And I found that to be very beneficial.
Did you ever have, like, making that move over, did you ever have regrets or imposter syndrome? Any of those things that kind of come up, like, oh, my gosh, what did I just do?
I would say I did not have regrets. And it's, you know, plenty of people who have left public accounting, most don't have regrets. Yeah. But the people that stay in it don't have regrets either, right? I mean, it's just when you're ready to finally make that transition out, you don't look back. Some people do, but it's kind of the reasons you left, like the reasons I left were just to be able to have a little bit better balance. I was able to, I say that I worked the same amount of hours, but it was spread out throughout the year, as opposed to being heavily in April through, or January through April. Other people make that work better. Great. Good for them. I'm not knocking at public accounting at all, but no, I did not miss it. And I maintained good relationships with those folks and, you know, really,
they didn't scorn you forever.
Yeah,
you left us
they
in
eventually
January.
Got over it.
Go figure.
A few years of silence. No.
Dinners that you paid for.
Yeah. But I didn't regret that change. But I would say there was. I haven't necessarily thought about that, but imposter syndrome, sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that then, especially if you're the top guy in the finance or accounting department, whether that's controller or CFO, of people relying on you for things that maybe you don't know the answer to. And I had that certainly early on, but I still have that sometimes now. And it's learning to be okay saying, I don't know the answer, but I got a bunch of good ways to go figure it out.
Yeah.
Right. And that was something I look back on fondly, I guess, of early on, was I didn't try to pretend that I was somebody that I wasn't. I leaned into the things that I had a lot of good experience on. And then I worked on the things that I didn't have the experience on. And I, to my bosses, didn't pretend that I had that experience either. I didn't say, I don't know how to do that. Sorry. I said, I've never done that before, but I'm going to go figure it out and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was the other piece of that from public accounting, was I just felt like I had met a lot of people who I could go to and ask. So I had clients that were doing now what I did. And I reached out to some of those folks and I said, hey, I've got this scenario. I've never done this before. What, do you have any advice? Right. And I've, throughout my career, have found that there's a lot of value in just talking to others that sit in the same seat. Right.
You've brought up this word relationships. It's not a word, but yeah. but you've brought this up several times. And I'm just curious how you, because some people are better at it than others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's introverts and extroverts, but I swear it doesn't matter if you're an introvert or an extrovert when it comes to relationships and building them. But what have you done? Like, what, obviously you stayed in touch with people, but is there something you've done with intentionality that, or is that just who you are as a person?
That's a good question. I mean, I think I'm actually more of an introvert, but that doesn't mean that I won't put myself in positions to have to engage with others.
Yeah.
There's a difference between it being an introvert and being someone who is shy and won't talk, right?
Fair.
And I think the getting outside of your comfort zone in that latter group is important. And I wasn't that way, right? I did have the ability to talk to others and feel mostly comfortable. But being willing to show up would be what I'd say is the biggest thing, right? So it was the networking events or whatever, being willing to continue conversations, have conversations, meet new people. That was always something that I enjoyed, but there were times where I didn't maybe want to do it, or I maybe felt uncomfortable in the scenario that was being presented. But it was, you know, number one, being consistent enough, right? I mean, you got your day job, whatever that is, whether you're in public accounting or in a seat like mine now, you gotta get that stuff done first.
Right.
If you're not getting that stuff done, you can't do the others. But assuming you're getting those things done, then it's making time to build relationships. And I've very selfishly found lots of benefits to that over my career. And it's what I've talked about already, which is just, you know, help me be better at my job. But at times it's been people who helped me introduce me to new things.
Sure.
I mean, even you and I, right? We met through somebody that I met through an association event who, you know,
it's
just, and we've never worked together, but we've now talked several times.
You knew 3 months later you're going to be sitting here and, you know, in a podcast.
But I mean this, right? This is not something where I'm like, oh, I would love to be on a podcast.
Right.
It's like, you know what? It'll be a good experience.
Yeah.
I like Troy. If he's wanting to do that, I'm willing to help out. But it's good to step outside of my comfort zone. And I find that with relationships, kind of what we're talking a little bit about with networking, but also just as a manager or a supervisor, you talk expectations, accountability, all that kind of stuff. If you can define those expectations, then it shouldn't be as hard to hold people accountable to them. But it's challenging myself to sometimes have those conversations that I know I don't want to have. But they often go much better than you maybe fear in your head, whether that's the networking side or just having a tough conversation with someone you manage or someone you don't manage.
I'm curious about the networking side for you because, you know, I think you maybe almost make it sound too easy, right? Because I didn't know I was going to see you at the event the other day and we were both there, but that takes effort. It's during the workday. And I think some of the things I hear all the time is, well, that's extra time. It's either nights during my lunch break or mornings or whatever it is. Have you found a way to make sure, or have you decided where you're going to invest that time in your relationships to where it doesn't feel like work? You know, like you already said, it benefits you. But I think when people start seeing that as an extra piece of work instead of something that is beneficial, is there something that you've done, your list to move from public to industry? Have you done that in whether it be events that you go to or groups that you show up to?
I haven't thought through it as intentionally as I did for that transition, but it's a good question. I mean, it's all a balance, right? And it's where are you trying to go? And what energizes you? If the networking stuff really does not energize you, then you're not going to probably get a lot out of
it.
Right?
Up, right.
But if you see the value, maybe meeting some new people or putting yourself out of your comfort zone, I think you'll often find that you're glad you did it. But so for me, what do I think about with balancing my time? I don't have hard and fast rules, but there are a few things that I try to think about. One is one of the hours, right? So I say no to far more things that are after hours now, because I have kids in sports and a wife that wants to see me, right? Yep. So it has to be a good reason to do that or to travel. A lot of my travel is optional. So again, what does this do to my family life? So I'm much more likely to say things in the middle of the day like this, right? I can make up the work side of it, and I'm not taking away time from my family. Two, is this benefit me alone, or does it benefit my employer, the person who's paying my paycheck, right? If it's me alone, that doesn't mean the answer is always no, but I need to be cognizant of how many things I'm saying yes to that are me alone, right? A lot of the things that I think benefit me also benefit my employer, meaning I think that they'll help me be better in my job. The event that I saw you at recently, the association event, those are helpful at me being better at my job. Yeah. Sometimes they're things that also give me CPE, right, which I need to keep my licenses and things like that. So does it benefit me? Does it benefit my career, or excuse me, my employer? And I guess the last thing that's maybe a little different, but being an auditor, we always would think about what could go wrong. I carry that into a lot of what I do from a day-to-day standpoint as a CFO. But I think about that in these things too, right? So what could go wrong if I go do a podcast and I sound awful? Like, you know.
Fair.
I won't get any opportunities from that podcast. But maybe my buddy gets some good content. Or maybe I get better, and if I do it again, I sound better, right? The what could go wrong is pretty low as far as risks, right? What could go wrong at an event and I go sit and talk to somebody? They may not really want to talk back. Okay. I probably won't ever see them again, right? You know, just thinking through some of those things as far as like putting myself outside of my comfort zone.
That's good. Yeah. I think that's good. Even if it's something you haven't thought about, I think you've naturally found your path in the ones that do make sense. And you mentioned your current employer, so let's talk about that, right? Unless I've missed something that we need to backpedal to, talk a little bit about Driver Pipeline.
Yeah, so Driver Pipeline's been a really good fit for me. So it's construction, but it's also different, which is fun, right? Being in public accounting for so long, you kind of get used to continually being challenged and having to learn new things. So I don't necessarily love monotony and doing the same processes over and over, day by day. Learning something new has always been something that I've enjoyed. And so learning something new at Driver Pipeline is it's a different kind of contractor. It's most of the contractors that I've worked with or audited in the past were long-term contracts. You got your WIP schedule, and it's the types of customers you're working with were builders or developers or things of that nature. At Driver Pipeline, it's energy companies, and it's a lot of short-term work. It's MSAs and service work and leaks and whatever, and it's mostly for, you know, a large utility company and other utility companies. So number one, we operate in the oil and gas industry, but we're a construction company. So the accounting side fits right in my wheelhouse, but the customer base is different. That's not a significant impact on my role, but it's been interesting. And then, you know, the type of work we do, I always have an interest in it, even though the direct correlation to maybe my job is not always there, but something we may get to at some point is there's still a benefit to me understanding what's going on at the company if you're trying to have some influence in things that benefit the finance and accounting side of things or risk management. You not understanding what the company does or what those guys in the field are going through at all, it makes it harder to have influence. But Driver Pipeline's been around for 50 years, family-owned company. Started by James Driver, now it's run by his son, Russell. He's been my boss here now for 4 months. It's been great. I feel like it's a good fit for what I bring to the table. And it's a good fit for, it's a company that's got a lot of opportunity, right? I mean, I'm joining a company that's had a lot of success, but opportunity to grow in different directions, a team that's strong. It's been really fun.
And you're sitting in the CFO seat. And you've got finance, accounting, and HR. What's that team size? And I guess, actually, don't even care about the team size. I'm more interested in, you've had these teams in several different companies now, and I'm curious what you've seen from either attraction or retention standpoint. And now that you've got even, you know, even you throw in HR, it's a whole, that's a whole nother animal. What have you seen as far as attracting them, retaining them, all the things like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, at any of the stops, it's different from public accounting, right? And I won't keep going back to public accounting, but people's motivations are different. Finding people, it depends on the role, but I've often found, again, we haven't talked about this, everyone I hired at the first job out of public accounting was through a recruiter. We would post the jobs. So, I mean, it was an HR coordinator, it was a payroll manager, and it was a staff accountant. We'd post the jobs. I didn't want to pay your fee.
Sure.
But the candidates that we got were just better from a recruiter. And it's because of things that you guys talk about, which is the best candidates aren't the ones that are not looking at your post, right? Sure. So I found a lot of success with that. I'll still always post things publicly, but I'm not going to shy away from a recruiter. I'd rather pay to get the right person in, right? And so from an attraction standpoint, one, it's getting good candidates, and how do you find them? It's, you got to have somebody that's actively going out there. If you're sitting back, and depending on the role, if you're sitting back and waiting for people to apply on Indeed, oftentimes Those are people who are just churning a little bit more. Though we have found candidates at places through that method. Two, then, I mean, it's, if they've got the resume, then I don't focus too much on the resume. And I'm not involved in all the interviews. It kind of depends what level it is or what role. But once I agree to have you come and interview for the position, then I want to hear a little bit about your background and understand how you've gone through different challenges in your career. But I want to see if you're a good fit, right? I don't think that accounting is some voodoo that's hard to learn. So if you've got the basics for it and clearly shown that you can do it, then I figure you can do it here too. But then you fit with what I want to work with on a day-to-day basis, right? I mean, we haven't talked about it, but it's, everyone still wants to go, you spend a lot of time at the office, you want to be somewhere where you enjoy the people you're working with and maybe have some fun, right? I mean, we want to get in and out and get back to our families or our lives, but you've seen the data. I mean, you spend more time with these people. Yeah. So I focus a lot on that. And I've found that to be very beneficial, is to focus on culture when I'm hiring. Because there's plenty of people who can do the job, but they don't fit your style or what you're trying to do, and it's probably not going to work.
So have you seen anything different over, you know, your, I guess let's call it the last 10 years, but have you seen anything different when it comes to the people that you're trying to hire? I mean, whether it's their needs or your hiring philosophies, has that evolved over time? I'm just curious about that.
I don't know. I mean, I certainly see a lot changing in the market. How much has that impacted, you know, me and our hiring within my teams? Some. I mean, people certainly of the younger generations want different things than what the other generations maybe do. So post-COVID, we learned all how to do remote work, right? So having some flexibility is something that a lot of people look for. I've worked in construction. We're largely we want you to show up. But, you know, do we have the ability to be flexible for people who need some flexibility, right? That's something that has come up a lot. If you don't have any of that, you're narrowing your pool a lot. Benefits. I think that stuff has changed as far as what people want from their benefits package, whether that's time off or, you know, these FSAs and HSAs and 401ks. And people are, I think, in a social media age, people just know more about what they want to look for in a job. And I found that is a different conversation maybe than it was even 5 years ago.
I don't know if we've missed anything yet, but I think there's a lot of things that we've covered today that the listeners are going to get from. But I guess the last question I have before you get out of here is, you know, I guess the one thing or one piece of advice that, as far as a takeaway, that if somebody is 5 or 10 years kind of out from where you are now, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it always obviously differs based on scenario, but if I were to come up with one piece of advice, I mean, I think I would say learn what your boss cares about and maybe what your boss's boss cares about, right? I think at times in my career, I figured opportunity would just come by doing a good job of the things that have been assigned to me. And it's noticed, but you got to kind of ask sometimes for more opportunity or for a new role or to take on new responsibility. And so that starts with understanding, what does your boss care about? That's my job right now, right? Being at the top of the finance or accounting, I mean, there was a job description, but I am not actively managed or given guidance, and that's not a knock on my boss or my last boss, or it's they expect you to figure out what needs to be important, and they'll give you some things that they care about, but otherwise you got to self-manage. But I think you can practice that at any level, which is similar to what we said with the networking. You got to get stuff that the stuff on your job description needs to be done first. But then that owner's mentality or that boss's mentality, like what can I do to help my boss out? What does that person care about that they're maybe not asking me for? Are there ways I can impact that? Showing initiative is going to take you far, I think, because in my shoes, if someone's bringing some ideas to the table, great. There's probably too much credit given that I'm always thinking about all the different opportunities, right? I'm focused on some, but the best opportunities are going to come if the people reporting to me are thinking of them, those opportunities themselves, and presenting it for discussion.
This advice is worth the wait for the entire time. I don't think a lot of people have shared that with me before. It's going to be something that's good to take away.
Good. I hope so.
I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thanks, Troy.
I'm Troy Ashby. And remember, people are more than their titles and companies are more than their balance sheets. Follow Beyond the Ledger so you never miss an episode.